It's nothing like that. It's like this. When people have problems, you know, I come in here and I see that people from all over have problems. I mean, the people that I've made friends with are pretty much a bunch of lowlifes, old drug addicts, people who can't hold jobs. But then every few days, someone new comes in who looks like he just got out of a business meeting. Noelle nods. She's seen them, too. The scruffy, youngish guy who came in today with a pile of books as if it were a reading retreat. The guy who came in yesterday in a suit and told me in the most practical way that he heard voices and they were a real pain in the ass. They didn't say anything scary, but they were always saying the stupidest stuff while he was in trial. And not only in here, all over. My friends are all calling me up now. This one's depressed, that one's depressed. I look at what the doctors hand out, and there are studies that show like 1/5 of Americans suffer from a mental illness, and suicide is the number 2 killer among teenagers and all this crap. I mean, everybody's messed up. What's your point? We wear our problems differently. Like I didn't talk and stopped eating and threw up all the time.
You threw up?
Yeah, bad. And I stopped sleeping. And when I started doing that, my parents noticed and my friends noticed, sort of. They kind of made fun of me. But I could go through the world without really letting on what was wrong. Until I came here. Now it's like something is wrong. Or was wrong, because it feels like it's getting better.
What does this have to do with me?
You're out there about your problems, I say. You put them on your face. She stops, puts her hand in her hair.
I cut my face because too many people wanted something from me, she tries to explain.
There was so much pressure, it was
something to live up to.
Exactly. People told you you were hot, and then all of a sudden they treated you different?
Right.
How?
She sighs. You have to be the prude or the slut. And if you pick one, other people hate you for it. And you can't trust anyone anymore, because they're all after the same thing. And you see that you can never go back to how it was before.
She pulls her face into one of those faces that could be laughing or crying. They use so many of the same muscles. And leans forward.
And I didn't want to be part of it, she says. I didn't want to be part of that world.
I grab her, leaning into me. Feel for the first time the soft dimple of her body.
Me neither.
She puts her arms around me, and we hold each other like that from our 2 chairs, like a house constructed over them. And I don't move my hands at all, and neither does she. I didn't want to play the smart game, I tell her, and you didn't want to play the pretty game.
The pretty game's worse, she whispers. Nobody wants to use you for being smart.
People wanted to use you?
Someone did. Someone who shouldn't.
I stop.
I'm sorry. It wasn't you.
Should I not touch you?
No, no, you didn't do anything. It's okay. But, yeah, it happened. And I lied before.
About what?
It doesn't matter what kind of surgery I have. I did it with half a scissor, Craig. It's going to leave scars. I'll have scars for the rest of my life. I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to get off the world a little after this thing. And now I'm never going to be able to have a job or anything. What are they going to say when I go into a job interview looking like...
She sniffles, chuckles, and snot comes out. Like a Klingon.
There are places in California where they speak Klingon. You can get a job there. Stop it.
We're still holding each other. I don't want to look up. I keep my eyes closed.
There are anti-discrimination laws, too. They can't not hire you if you're qualified. But I look like a freak now.
I told you, Noelle, I say into her ear.
Everybody has problems. Some people just hide their crap better than others. But people aren't going to look at you and run away. They're going to look at you and think that they can talk to you, and that you'll understand, and that you're brave, and that you're strong. And you are. You're brave and strong. You're getting better at the compliments.
Nah, I'm nothing. I can barely hold food down.
Yeah, you're skinny.
She laughs.
We need to fatten you up.
I know.
I'm glad I met you.
You're bare and honest, Noel. That's what you are. Words come into my head like they've always been there. And in Africa, your scarring would be highly prized.
She sniffles again. I didn't like seeing you with that other girl.
I know.
You like me more, right?
Right.
Why?
I pull away from her. Maybe the first time in my life I've ended a hug. Because a level of eye contact is required. I owe you a lot more than I do her. You really opened my eyes to something. My actual eyes have been closed for so long on Noelle's shoulder that the hall is blinding. But when they readjust, I see the professor, watching us from her door, holding the doorknob with one hand and her shoulder with the other. I wanted to show you this. I reach under my chair to pick up something for our meeting. I had it down there as a trump card. I didn't think the date would go like this. I thought it would all be Noelle yelling at me and I'd have to do something drastic. But now I can do something drastic and it'll be like a cherry on top. I pull out my couple's brain map and show it to her.
It's beautiful.
It's a guy and a girl, see? I didn't do any hair, but you can see how one has a feminine profile and the other is masculine. They're lying down, not on top of each other, just side by side, floating in space. They have sketched out legs and arms at their sides, but that's the whole point of my brain maps. You don't need to spend a lot of time on the legs or the arms. What they really have are brains, full and complete with whirling bridges and intersections and plazas and parks. They're the most elaborate ones I've done yet. Divided thoroughfares, alleys, cul-de-sacs, tunnels, toll plazas, and traffic circles. The paper is 14 inches by 17 inches, and I had room to make the maps huge. The bodies are small and unimportant. The key thing that your eye is drawn to, because I understand now, somehow, that that's how art works, is a soaring bridge between the two heads, longer than the Verrazano even, with coils of ramps like ribbons mashed up at each end. It might be my best yet, I say. She looks it over. I see the red in her eyes fading. There aren't any tear streaks. I still haven't seen actual tear streaks on anyone. Her tears went right into my shirt. They cool and chafe now on my shoulder. You were the one who suggested I do stuff from childhood, I continue. I used to do these when I was a kid, and I forgot how fun they were.
I'll bet you never did them like this.
No, well, this is easier, because I don't have to finish the maps.
It's beautiful.
Thanks for getting me started. I owe you big.
Thank you. Do I get to keep it?
She looks up.
Not yet. I have to fix it up.
I stand, stretch my back, and shrug down at her.
Do it, soldier.
Yes, sir. But, I kind of wondered if I could have your phone number so I can call you when we're out of here. She smiles, and her cuts outline her face like a cat's whiskers.
Crafty.
I am a guy, I say.
And I hate boys, she says.
But a guy's different, I say.
Maybe a little, she says.
Chapter 42. Humble is back at dinner. He has entirely new clothes, a sparkly, clean-shaven face, and eyes that won't quite open all the way. He stations himself at his usual table under the TV in the dining room, which everyone left empty while he was gone. Noelle's there, too, at the next table, her back to him. I walk in, say hi to both of them, grab the tables, put them together, and sit between them, smiling. Noelle, I don't know if you've had the chance to meet Humble.
Not really, she says. She's still grinning.
From our date, I hope. Humble, Noelle. Noelle, Humble.
He says, squinting his eyes. Those cuts on your face are trippy.
Thanks. They shake hands.
You have a good handshake for a girl, says Humble.
You have a good one for a guy,
My dinner is beans and hot dogs and salad, with cookies and a pear at the end. I tackle it.
So where'd they take you?
I ask between bites.
Across the hall to geriatric, says Humble.
With the old people?
Noel asks.
Yeah, that's where they take you when they have to get you whacked out of your mind.
Where do you hear the term whack?
Noel asks.
Whacked?
Humble picks a piece of salad out of his teeth with his thumb.
No, she thinks you're saying whack, like that's whack, I explain.
Whack, wacky, whacked, it's all the same word. This is an old word. I used to have an uncle named Wacky. What are you laughing at? Man, don't start with me. This kid is a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I know, says Noel, and she bangs her knee against my thigh.
Awesome. A girl hasn't done that to me since, like, fourth grade.
He's a mess.
I know, says Humble. It's because he's too smart for his own good. He comes in here, he's burned out. I've seen it before. I see it all the time. But in people in their 20s, 30s, this guy is so smart that he got burned out in half the time. He's having like a midlife crisis as a teenager.
Forget the midlife crisis, I say. It's all about the sixth life crisis.
What the hell is that?
Well, I look at Noelle. She's not going to hit me with her leg again? I'm not sure if I want to talk. I don't want to bore her, but I know I won't bore Humble, and if I don't bore her either, that would make it like a major victory.
Well, first there's the quarter-life crisis, I say. That's like the characters on Friends, people freaking out that they won't get married. 20-year-olds? That's probably true that people get quarter-life crises. I wouldn't know, but I know that now things work faster.
Before, you had to wait until you were 20 to have enough choices of things to do with your life to start getting freaked out. But now there's so much stuff for you to buy, and so many ways you can spend your time, and so many specialties that you need to get started on very early in life. Like ballet, right, Noel? When did you start ballet?
4.
Okay, I started Taibo at 6. So there are, like, so many people angling for success, and so many colleges you're supposed to get into, and so many women you're supposed to have sex with.
You gotta freak them, says Johnny from across the room. Were we talking to you? Humble asks. Eat your salt. What, tough guy? How about I knock your head off? How would you like that?
Boys... Noelle stands up and pulls her hair away from her cheeks, which are red in addition to being cut up. Everybody shuts up. So now, I continue, instead of a quarter-life crisis, they've got a fifth-life crisis. That's when you're 18. And a sixth-life crisis. That's when you're 14. I think that's what a lot of people have.
What you have.
Not just me. It's the, should I keep going?
Yes, Noel says.
Well, there are a lot of people who make a lot of money off the fifth and sixth life crises. All of a sudden, they have a ton of consumers scared out of their minds and willing to buy facial cream, designer jeans, SAT test prep courses, condoms, cars, scooters, self-help books, watches, wallets, stocks, whatever. All the crap that the 20-somethings used to buy, they now have the 10-somethings buying. They doubled their market.
Bobby has pulled up a chair next to me. This kid is a freaking lunatic, he says.
I hope they keep him in here, says Humble.
So pretty soon, I keep thinking, there'll be seventh and eighth life crises. Then eventually a baby will be born and the doctors will look at it and wonder right away if it's unequipped to deal with the world. If they decide it doesn't look happy, they'll put it on antidepressants. Get it started on that particular consumer track. Humble says. I think he's going to follow it up with something, but instead he says, Then,
your problem is you have a worldview totally informed by depression.
He leans in.
What about rage?
I was never big on rage.
Why?
It's so much more angry in my head than it could ever be outside.
Extra cookies.
It's one of the nurses. We all get in line. It's oatmeal and peanut butter. As I shuffle forward, Noelle nudges me from behind. When I turn to her, she turns her face away, as if I were trying to kiss her, but she wouldn't let me. You're trouble, I say.
You're silly,
she answers. I did it. I talked, and she liked me. She thought I was smart. I start to develop a plan. Once I get my cookies, I go to the phone to call Dad, who's already bringing Blade 2 tomorrow night. I want him to bring something else, too. Part 9, 6 North, Wednesday. Chapter 43. This is your last full day at the hospital, is what I think when I get up. No one's taking my blood today. It's only happened once since Sunday. So I don't get up super early, but I'm still the first one in the halls. I take my shower and think about how much life would suck if hot water didn't come out of the shower head when you wanted. I've tried to take cold showers, and they're wonderful when they're over. But during the process, they feel like some form of animal torture. But then again, that's the point. When you take a cold shower, you're supposed to get in and out as fast as possible. That's why they do it in the army.
That's right. Want to take a shot, soldier?
I don't think so, sir.
Come on, what's the matter with you? You got a lot going for you. You don't want to keep it going?
I need a cold shower to keep things going.
That's right. Less time in the shower, more in the battlefield.
Fine. I can do this. I reach out and twist the temperature knob slowly to the left, then decide that I'm never going to get it done gradually, so I'll have to do it like a Band-Aid. I jerk it over. The water goes from toasty warm to frigid so quickly that I feel like it burns me. I bend my groin out of its path, but I know that's cheating, so I stick it back in as I furiously lather myself.
Leg, up, down. Other leg, up, down. Crotch, scrub, scrub, scrub. Chest, wipe, arm, down, back, other arm, down, back, neck, face, turn around, wash your butt, and I'm out.
Straight to the towel. I wrap it around myself and shiver. I'm so desperate to put my clothes on that my socks stick to my wet feet. I go out to talk with Smitty.
You okay?
First cold shower.
Of the day?
Of my life.
Yeah, that'll knock ya.
What's the news? Smitty holds up his paper. It seems that a new candidate is running for mayor of New York, promising to give everyone who votes for him a lap dance. He's a multi-billionaire, and at $100 per lap dance, he thinks he can lock up the vote. A lot of women are supporting him.
That's crazy.
I shiver.
It's like, who's out there and who's in here, you know?
Absolutely. Better music in here, though. Smitty turns up the radio.
By the way, that's a question I have. Can I play some music on the hall tonight, at the other end?
What kind?
There's no words, don't worry, nothing offensive. It's something one of the people on the hall will like a gift.
I'll have to see it first.
Okay.
And you know I'm bringing that Blade 2 movie tonight to watch with the group.
You think about that a minute. You're bringing a vampire movie onto a floor full of psych patients.
They can handle it.
I'm not gonna get any nightmares.
Promise.
Nightmares are a big problem in my job, Craig.
Understood.
Smitty sighs, puts his paper down, and gets up.
You want me to do your vitals?
He straps me in on the chair, pumps me up, and puts his soft fingertips on my wrist. Today I'm 120 over 70. First day I haven't been perfect.
Chapter 44.
How are you doing?
Dr. Minerva is like. It's 11 a.m. I sigh. After vitals was breakfast, where the guy who was afraid of gravity and rolling pin Robert were gone. Humble told me and Noelle that they got discharged. Toward the end of the meal, Noelle touched her leg against mine for as long as it took me to drink the first sip of my after-breakfast sweet touch knee tea, which was a big sip. Then Monica announced that we'd be screening Blade 2 tonight opposite the smoking lounge, and everybody got excited, especially Johnny.
Huh, that movie is cool. A lot of vampires die.
No announcements about my music, but then again it hadn't arrived yet. I took my Zoloft in my little plastic cup and drew some brain maps by the window in the corner of the hall next to Jimmy. I handled my phone messages, started thinking seriously about what I'd do the moment I got out. Would I buy a cup of coffee? Walk to the park? Go home and start in on the email? And that got me started thinking about email, and all of a sudden I was really glad to have Dr. Minerva to go to. I'm doing okay, I think. She looks at me calm and steady. Maybe she's my anchor.
What's got you in doubt, Craig?
Excuse me?
You said you were okay, you think. Why do you just think it?
That's an expression, I say.
This isn't the place to be leaving if you're not feeling better, Craig.
Right. Well, I've been thinking about my email.
Yes?
I'm really worried about getting out there and having to check it. The phones I'm caught up with, but the email might be pretty deadly.
Deadly? How can email be deadly, Craig?
Well, I lean back, take a deep breath. Then I remember something. You know how I had a lot of problems with starting and stopping my sentences before?
Yes? Not lately.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the opposite.
Like words can just pour out of me the way they used to when I used to get in trouble in class.
Which was...
She focuses on her pad to write this down. A year ago, before I went to executive pre-professional.
Right. Now tell me about the email.
The email. I put my hands on the table. I hate it. Like right now, I haven't been checking it for 5 days, okay?
Since Saturday.
She nods.
That's right. Now what are people thinking while they're trying to reach me?
These are people who probably already have some idea where I am because Nia told Aaron the number and he figured it out.
Right. A big source of shame for you.
Yes. But even if someone has no idea where I am, what are they thinking? 5 days. They're like, he's crazy. He must have OD'd or something. Everyone is expecting me to answer them instantly, and I'm not able to.
Who emails you, Craig?
People who want homework assignments, teachers, school clubs, announcements about charities I should volunteer in, invitations to executive pre-professional football, basketball, squash games.
So they're mostly school-related.
They're all school-related. My friends don't email me. They call.
So why don't you just ignore the emails?
I can't.
Why not?
Because then people will be offended.
And what happens then?
Well, I won't get to join clubs, get credits, participate in stuff, get extra credit. I'll fail.
At school.
Right. I pause. No, it's not exactly school. It's what comes after school. At life.
Ah, she pauses. Life.
Right.
Failing at school is failing at life.
Well, I'm in school. That's the one thing I'm supposed to do. I know a lot of famous people didn't do well at school, like James Brown. He dropped out in fifth grade to be an entertainer. I respect that, but that's not going to be me. I'm not going to be able to do anything but work as hard as possible all the time and compete with everyone I know all the time to make it. And right now, school's the one thing I need to do. And I'm away from the email, and I can't do it.
But your definition of school isn't really one thing. It's many different things, Craig.
Extracurricular activities, plus sports, plus volunteering. That's not to mention homework.
Right. How anxious would you say you are about all of this, Craig?
I think back to what Bobby said about anxiety being a medical thing. The email has been in the back of my mind since I got here. The nagging knowledge that when I get out, I'll have to sit on the computer for 5 or 6 hours going through everything I've missed, answering it in reverse order because that's the way it comes in, and therefore taking the longest time to respond to the people who emailed me in the most distant past. And then as I'm answering them, more will come in, and they'll sit on top of my stack and mock me, dare me to answer them before digging down, telling me that I need them, as opposed to the one or two emails that are actually about something I care about. Those will get saved to the end, and by the time I have the time to deal with them, they'll be so out of date that I'll just have to apologize. Sorry, man. I haven't been able to answer my email. No, I'm not important, just incapable.
Craig? Very anxious, I answer. The email anxiety and the failure talk, these are subjects you've brought up before. They are very distressing to you.
I know. I'm sweating.
You are?
Yeah, and I haven't been sweating for a while.
You've been away from your tentacles.
Right. Not anymore. Now I get to go back, and they're all right there for me.
Do you remember what I asked you last time? About whether or not you'd found any anchors in here?
Yes.
She pauses. In order to ask a question, it is often possible for Dr. Minerva only to intimate that she might ask a question.
I think I've found one, I sigh.
What's that?
Can I get up and get it?
Absolutely.
I leave the office and walk down the hall, where Bobby is leading a new recruit on his welcoming tour, a black guy with wild teeth and a stained blue sweatshirt.
This is Craig, Bobby says. He's real young, but he's on the level. He does drawings.
I shake the man's hand. That's right. I do drawings.
Human being, the man says. That's his name,
Bobby explains, rolling his eyes.
Your name isn't Craig. It's human being, too, the man says.
I nod, break the handshake, and keep walking to my room. It's literally like breaking away from a monster. The further I get from thinking about email and Dr. Minerva and the fact that I'm going to have to leave here and go back to executive pre-professional, the calmer I get. And the closer I get to the brain maps, to this little stupid thing I can do, the calmer I get. I walk past Muktada, he's staring and trying to sleep, and take my art off the radiator cover. I cradle it in a stack past Bobby and Human Being, who's now explaining how his real last name is Green, and that's what he needs, some green, back into the office.
I kinda like it in here, I say to Dr. Minerva.
This room?
No, the hospital.
When you're finished, you can volunteer.
I talked to the guitar guy, Neil, about that. I think I'll try. I can get school credit.
Is that the reason you should volunteer, Craig?
No, I shake my head. I'm just joking.
Dr. Minerva cuts her face into a wide smile. So, what do we have here? I plop them down on the table. There are 24 now. No kind of crazy breakthroughs, just variations on a theme. Pigs with brain maps that resemble St. Louis, my couple for Noel joined by the sweeping bridge, a family of metropolises.
Your artwork, she says.
She leafs through them. Going, oh my, at the particularly good ones. I constructed this stack last night, not just for Dr. Minerva, for anybody. The brain maps have a certain order. Ever since I've been doing them, they've been making it clear that they should be stacked for presentation.
Craig, these are wonderful.
Thanks. I sit down. We were both standing. I didn't even notice.
You started these because you used to do them when you were 4?
Right. Well, something like them.
And how do they make you feel?
I look at the pile.
Awesome.
She leans in.
Why?
I have to think about that one, and when Dr. Minerva makes me think, I don't get embarrassed and try to skip it. I look to the left and stroke my chin.
Because I do them, I say.
I do them and they're done. It's almost like, you know, peeing?
Yes.
Dr. Minerva nods. Something you enjoy.
Right. I do it. It's successful. It feels good, and I know it's good. When I finish one of these up, I feel like I've actually done something, and like the rest of my day can be spent doing whatever, stupid crap, email, phone calls, all the rest of it.
Craig, have you ever considered the fact that you might be an artist?
I have other stuff, too, I keep going.
What did she say?
First of all, I was thinking about this perpetual candle, like a candle on the ground with another candle hanging upside down over it, and as the first candle melts, the wax is kept molten by some kind of hot containment unit and gets pumped up to the second candle and drips down like a stalactite-stalagmite thing. And then I was also thinking, what if you filled a shoe with whipped cream?
Just a man's shoe filled with whipped cream?
That's pretty easy to do. And then you could keep going. A T-shirt filled with Jell-O. a hat full of applesauce. That's art, right? That kind of stuff. What did you say about artists?
She chuckles. You seem to enjoy what you're doing here.
Yeah, well, duh, it's not the most difficult thing in the world.
You're not sweating now.
This is a good anchor for me, I say.
I admit it.
It's a stupid thing to admit. It means that I'm not practical. But then again, I'm already in the loony bin. How practical am I going to get? I might have to give up on practical.
That's right, Craig. This can be your anchor.
Dr. Minerva stares at me and doesn't blink. I look at her face, the wall behind her, the door, the shades, the table, my hands on the table, the brain maps between us. I could do the one on the top a little better. I could try putting some wood grain in there with the streets. Knots of wood in people's heads. That could work. This can be my anchor. I nod. But
what, Craig?
What am I going to do about school? I can't go to executive pre-professional for art.
I'm going to throw a wild notion at you.
Dr. Minerva leans back, then forward.
Have you ever thought about going to a different school?
I stare ahead.
I hadn't.
I honestly hadn't. Not once. Not in my whole life. Not since I started there. That's my school. I worked harder to get in than I did for anything else, ever. I went there because, coming out of it, I'd be able to be president. Or a lawyer. Rich, that's the point. Rich and successful. And look where it got me. One stupid year. Not even one, like three-quarters of one. And here I am with not one, but two bracelets on my wrist, next to a shrink in a room adjacent to a hall where there's a guy named Human Being walking around. If I keep doing this for 3 more years, where will I be? I'll be a complete loser. And what if I keep on? What if I do okay, live with the depression, get into college, do college, go to grad school, get the job, get the money, get kids and a wife and a nice car? What kind of crap will I be in then? I'll be completely crazy. I don't want to be completely crazy. I don't like being here that much. I like being a little crazy, enough to volunteer here. Not enough to ever, ever, ever come back.
Yes, I say. Yes, I have thought about it.
When?
Just now.
I smile.
Absolutely.
And what do you think?
I clap my hands together and stand up.
I think I should call my parents and tell them that I want to transfer schools.
Chapter 45.
Visitor, Craig!
Smitty pokes his head into the dining room. I slide my chair back from the table, where I'm playing after-lunch poker with Jimmy and Noel and Armelio. Jimmy doesn't really have any idea how to play, but we deal him cards, and he plays them face down and smiles, and we give him more chips. We're using scraps of paper. The buttons are locked up due to our recklessness. Whenever he pockets his, or chews them up.
I'll be back, I say.
This guy, so busy, says Armelio.
He thinks he's all important, Noel says.
I woke up, and the bed was on fire, says Jimmy.
We all look at him.
You okay, Jimmy? I ask.
My mom hit me in the head. She hit me in the head with a hammer!
Oh, wow. I turn to Armelio. I heard him say stuff like this down in the ER.
Has he talked about this before?
No, nuh-uh, buddy.
Hey, Jimmy, it's okay. I put my hand on his shoulder. At the same time, I bite my tongue. You can think someone's hilarious and want to help them at the same time.
She hit me in the head, he says, with a hammer!
Yeah, but you're here now, Noel says. You're safe. Nobody's going to hit you in the head with anything.
Jimmy nods. I keep my hand on his shoulder. I keep my tongue bit down, but I make little chuffing noises as I try to keep from laughing, and he looks up and notices. He smiles at me, then laughs himself, then picks his cards up and claps my back.
It'll come to you, he says.
That's right. I know it will.
I excuse myself from the room and head down the hall. Right at the end is Aaron, holding the record I want. Dad didn't have it.
"Hey, man," he says sheepishly, and as I approach, he leans it against the wall. He's a dick, but I'm not perfect either, so I come up and hug him.
"Hey."
"Well, you were right. My dad had it.
Egyptian Masters, Volume 3.
I so appreciate this. I take the record. It's got a picture on the cover of what looks like the Nile at dusk, with a palm tree lilting left, echoing the brightening moon, and the purple sky rolling up from the horizon.
"Yeah, I'm sorry about everything," Aaron says. I've had a weird couple of days.
"You know what?" I look him in the eyes.
"Me too."
"I bet,"
he smiles.
"Yeah, from now on, whenever crap goes down, you can be like, 'Oh, Craig, I had a bad few days,' because I will get what you're talking about."
"What's it like in here?" he asks.
"There's people whose lives have been screwed up for a long time, and then there are people like me whose lives have been screwed up for, you know, shorter."
"Did they put you on new drugs?"
"No, same ones I was on before."
"So are you feeling better?"
"Yeah."
"What changed?"
"I'm going to leave school."
"You're what?"
"I'm done. I'm going somewhere else."
"Where?"
"I don't know yet. I'm going to talk it over with my parents. Somewhere for art."
"You want to do art?"
"Yeah. I've been doing some in here. I'm good at it."
"You're pretty good at school, too, man."
I shrug. I don't really need to explain this to Aaron. He's been demoted from most important friend to friend, and he's going to have to earn that even. And you know what else? I don't owe people anything, and I don't have to talk to them any more than I feel I need to.
"What's up with Nia?" I ask. I have to tread carefully here. "I got your message about how things were bad.
They got worked out. It was my fault. I got all freaked out about her being on pills, and we broke up for, like, a few days."
"Why did that freak you out?"
"I don't need any more of that in my life, you know? I mean, it's bad enough with my dad."
"He's on medication?"
"Every form of medication in the book. Mom, too. And then me with the pot. When you come right down to it, there isn't anybody in the household who isn't seriously drugged except the fish."
"And you didn't want your girlfriend to be, too?"
"Her smoking is one thing. I can't really explain it. I guess you'll have to go out with someone for a long time to understand. If you're with somebody and then you learn that they need to take something on a daily basis, you wonder, how good can you be for them?"
"That's pretty stupid," I say.
"I met this girl in here."
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah. And she's really screwed up as me. But I don't look at that as an insult. I look at that as a chance to connect."
"Yeah, well, people are screwed up in this world. I'd rather be with someone screwed up and open about it than somebody perfect and, you know, ready to explode."
"I'm sorry, Craig."
Aaron looks at me deep and holds out a hand for me to slap.
"I'm sorry I was a bitch to you."
"You were a bitch."
I slap his hand.
"This album partly makes up for it. Just don't do it again."
"All right."
He nods. We stand still a minute. We haven't moved from the crux of the hallways near the entrance of 6 North. The double doors that I came in through are 8 feet behind him.
"Well, listen," he says. "Enjoy the record, and, hey, they have a record player in here?"
"They still smoke in here, Aaron. They're kind of back in time.
Enjoy it, and be in touch. And I'm sorry once again. I guess you won't be chilling for a while."
"I don't know. I may never be chilling again."
"Did you almost kill yourself to get in here?" Aaron asks. "That's what Nia told me."
"Yeah."
"Why?"
"Because I wasn't capable of dealing with the real world."
"Craig, don't kill yourself, okay?"
"Thanks."
"Just don't."
"I won't."
"I'll see you soon, man."
Aaron turns, and the nurses open the door for him. He's not a bad guy. He's just someone who hasn't had his stay on 6th North yet. I take the record to Smitty to store behind the nurses' station. Chapter 46. 6th North doesn't need a PA system because of President Armelio, but it does have one, used regularly for the simple and rhythmic messages of lunch is served, medication, and all smokers to the smoking lounge, smokers get your smokes. This afternoon it pipes up with a longer message, courtesy of Monica.
Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon our patient, Craig Gilner, who is leaving tomorrow, is going to be drawing his artwork for everyone on the floor. If you'd like your own personal piece of Craig's art, come to the end of the hallway by the dining room. End of the dining room hallway, 5 minutes. Have fun.
I sit down in the backmost chair, by the window that peers out over the avenue that crosses the street I live on, so close to my real life. I look over at my conference chair where I meet with my parents and Noel. I have a second chair set up in front of me as an art desk, with stacks of board games on it and a chessboard on top. It's a little flimsy, but it'll do. President Armelio is first to approach. He strides up, barrel-chested and sure of himself, like a torpedo.
Hey, buddy, this is great! You gonna make me one of your heads with the maps inside?
That's right.
Well, let's go, buddy. I ain't got all day.
Right. Armelio is going to have to be done fast because he is fast. I sketch the outline of his head and shoulders without a second thought and start in on his brain map. Highways. That's what Armelio has in his head. 6-lane highways running parallel, streaking through a city with purpose and minimal on-ramps. He doesn't have any quiet little streets or parks. It's highways and a grid, and no rivers either. The highways hardly even connect because Armelio doesn't mix up his thoughts. He has one and does it, and then he moves on to the next. It's a great way to live, especially when the biggest thought is wanting to play cards. Cards have to be represented in Armelio's brain somewhere. So I sketch some streets into an ace of spades right in the middle. It's not a great ace of spades, but Armelio gets it.
Spades! Buddy, I crush you in spades!
I put my initials on it, big and bold. CG, like computer-generated. I'm gonna keep this for real, Armelio says.
You a good guy, Craig.
He shakes my hand.
You want my number for when you go?
Sure. I take out a piece of paper.
It's an adult home, Armelio says. You're gonna have to ask for Spyros, which is my other name.
He gives me the number and moves aside, and there's Ebony, with her cane and her velvet pants, smacking her lips.
I heard that you were making your brains for people, she says.
That's right.
And you know who the first person who said they were brains was?
Me!
Absolutely. Now look.
I gesture at my stack of work on the floor. Now I've got all this.
So I get paid, right?
Ebony laughs. Not quite. I haven't really made it yet as an artist.
I know. It's tough.
So you just get a brain map for yourself, okay?
Good.
I trace her head freehand, looking at her, not the paper. I look down, and it's pretty good. Ebony's brain. What's in there? A lot of circles for all the buttons she stole. She was a nut with those buttons. Didn't mess around. Quite a schemer. And with all of her gambling skill, she needs to have a strip, like Vegas. So I get a big boulevard in the middle, and lots of traffic circles around it, with circular parks, circular malls, little circle lakes. It comes out looking less like a city and more like a necklace with a central band and tons of bunched-up jewels hanging off.
It's pretty, she says.
And you're done. I hand it to her.
You like doing these, huh?
Yeah. It helps, you know, with my depression. I came in here with depression.
Imagine having depression when you were 11 years old. Ebony says. If all my children were in this hall would be full up, I tell you.
You have kids?
I ask, keeping my voice down.
I had 13 miscarriages, she says. Imagine that.
And she looks at me without any of the humor or attitude that she usually puts on, just with big, wide eyes and empty questions.
I'm so sorry, I say. I know you are. That's the thing.
Ebony shuffles away, showing off her portrait.
That's me! See? Me!
She doesn't leave a phone number. Humble is next.
All right, man, what kind of scam you got going on here?
It's nothing. I start in on Humble's bald head. Bald heads are easy. You know, if I had to right now, I think I could handle the lower tip of Manhattan. I look at Humble. He raises his eyebrows at me.
Make me look good, all right?
I laugh. Inside Humble's head is industrial chaos. I don't make any small blocks, just big ones. The kind of blocks where you'd find lumber shops and factories and bars where Humble would hang out at and work. I put the ocean in there to represent his hometown, Bensonhurst, which borders the ocean, where he hooked up with all those girls way back when. Then I splash it with highways, erasing the streets and putting them over the top, throwing in crazy interchanges for no reason, making the whole thing look violent and random, but also powerful and true. The kind of mind that could come up with some great stuff if you harnessed it right. When I'm done, I look up.
I guess it's okay.
He shrugs. I chuckle. Thanks, Humble.
I want you to remember me, he says. No joke. When you're a big-time artist or whatever, you gotta invite me to one of the parties.
It's a deal, I say. But how am I going to be in touch?
Oh, right. I got a number. Humble says. I'm gonna be staying in Seaside Paradise. It's the same home that Emilio's going to, but I'm going to be on a different floor.
He gives me the number. I put it on the same sheet as Emilio's.
You're not gonna be in touch, Humble says.
I will, I say.
No, you won't. I can tell. But it's okay. You have a lot going for you. Just don't burn out again.
We shake hands. Up next is Noelle.
Hey, girl. Don't you dare start calling me that.
This is very nice of you to do. Least I could do. They're all such cool people.
You're like a celebrity now. Everyone wants to know if I'm your girlfriend.
And what do you tell them?
No.
And then I walk away. Good call.
So what are you trying to pull? You already made one of these for me. You just said it wasn't finished.
I pull out the one I made for her, with the guy and girl connected by the bridge, and write my phone number on the back of it.
Oh my gosh!
Now it's done. I smile, standing up. I lean in and whisper,
it took me like twice as long as any of the others, and I'll make you an even better one when I get out.
She pushes me away.
Yeah, like I want your stupid art.
You do. I lean back. I saw how you looked at it before.
I'll keep it to make you feel good, she says. That's it.
Fine. She leans in and kisses my cheek.
Thank you. For real.
You're welcome.
Hey, what are you doing tonight? Well, I thought I'd be hanging out in the psych hospital. What about you?
I've got big plans, I say.
We've got a movie coming in. Right, I'm not seeing that stupid movie.
I know.
I drop to a whisper. But when it's halfway done, do you want to meet in my room? You're kidding. No, seriously. Your roommate will be there. He's always there. Trust me. Come to the room. Are you going to try and make out with me? If you must know, yes. I appreciate your honesty. We'll see.
I give her a hug. She holds the brain map with her hands wrapped around me.
And I already have your number, I say. You don't get any second chances if you lose it, she says. I don't give that number out twice.
I take a quick, wanting look at her as we pull away from each other, and she moves off to the side. Bobby is next.
Who's that behind you?
Who do you think?
Johnny answers. Come on up together, guys. I'll do you both at once.
Cool,
Bobby says, standing off to the side. Johnny stands next to him, and I start drawing them, their shaggy hair and baggy clothing making for great outlines.
So he's drawing us?
Johnny asks Bobby.
Be quiet, all right?
Where did you guys hang out? I ask Bobby, not looking up from the paper. Back when you were garbage heads.
What, you gonna draw that?
No, I look up. I'm just curious. What neighborhood?
It was the Lower East Side, but don't draw the Lower East Side, says Bobby. I don't want to go back there.
All right, fair enough. Where do you want to live?
On the Upper East Side, with all the rich people,
Bobby answers.
Me too, says Johnny.
Wait, no, you're getting a guitar, I say.
Oh, cool.
I start on Bobby's and Johnny's brains. With Johnny, it's fun to do a guitar in a street grid, some diagonal streets meeting for the body, and then a big wide boulevard for the neck, a park for the head. Then I turn to Bobby. I know the Upper East Side pretty well. It's in Manhattan, and the big thing that it has is Central Park, so I draw that on the inside left of his head. Then I put in the stately grid of rich streets. I know the Guggenheim Museum is somewhere up there. I mark that with an arrow, and then I put an X right next to it, on a corner where an apartment probably costs $20 million, and write, Bobby's Pad.
Bobby's Pad. That's right. That's where I'm headed.
He raises his arms.
Moving on up.
Enjoy. I hand them the piece.
Who gets what?
Johnny asks.
You want us to rip it apart?
No, man, we're supposed to keep it together because we're friends, says Bobby. I'll make a photocopy.
Where's the photocopy machine in here?
There isn't one. I'll do it when I get out.
Where's that gonna leave me?
With a copy.
I don't want a copy.
Would you listen to this guy? Nothing's good enough for him.
Hey, Bobby, I interrupt. Any way I can get yours and Johnny's phone numbers to talk to you after you leave? Johnny starts to say something, but Bobby leans in and stops him.
It's not a good idea, Craig.
What? Why? He sighs.
I've been in and out of this place a lot, right?
Yeah.
There are good things about this place. I mean, the food is the best around. There are good people here. But it's still not a place to meet people.
Why not? I met you guys, and you're really cool.
Yeah, well, all the worse then when you try to call me or Johnny up and find out that we've OD'd or been shot, or come back here even worse, or just disappeared.
That's a pretty negative view.
I've seen it before. You just remember us, okay? We meet in the outside world, it just ruins it. You'll be embarrassed of me, and I...
He smiles.
I might be embarrassed of me, too. And I might be embarrassed of you, if you don't keep your stuff together.
Thanks. You sure no numbers? Bobby shakes my hand.
If we need to, we'll meet.
Johnny shakes my hand.
What he said.
The last guy in line is Jimmy.
I tell you, what did I say? You play those numbers.
It'll come to you, I answer.
It's the truth,
he grins. Ah, Jimmy. What's in Jimmy's brain? Chaos. I do up his nearly bald head and shoulders, and then start putting the most complicated, unnecessary, wild highways through him from ear to ear. I connect them in intricate spaghetti ramps. In one nexus, 5 highways meet. I have to erase and redraw the ramps a few times. Then I put in the grid, a grid laid out by a hyperactive designer with blocks going in all different directions. When Jimmy's brain map is done, it might look the best, a catalog of a schizophrenic mind, but one that works somehow. Here you go, I tell him. He's sitting in a seat that he took next to me to watch me work.
It'll come to you,
he says, and takes the map. I want him to finally open up, to call me Craig, to tell me that we came in together. But he's still Jimmy. His vocabulary is still limited. We sit back in our respective chairs. I doze off a bit. Making art on demand is tiring. But the last thing I see before I go to sleep is Jimmy unfolding his brain map next to me and comparing with Ebony, who says, of course, hers is a lot prettier. That's not a bad thing to go to sleep to.
Chapter 47.
Craig, are you okay? Mom asks.
I jolt up, and I have a momentary seizure that it was all a dream, all of it, the whole 6 North bit. But then I wonder, where would the dream start? If it were a nightmare, it would have to have started somewhere before I got bad. It would be like a year-long dream. You don't have those. And if it were a good dream, that would mean I was still back where it started, leaning over my parents' toilet or lying in bed listening to my heart. I didn't need that.
Yeah, I'm...
Whoa. I sit up. They're all there. Dad, Mom, Sarah.
Are you forcing yourself to sleep? Mom asks. Are you depressed?
Are you on drugs? Sarah asks.
Can you hear me?
I was taking a nap. Jeez.
Oh, okay. It's 6 o'clock.
Wow, I was asleep for a while. I was drawing my brain maps for people.
Oh boy, says Dad. This doesn't sound good.
What are brain maps? Sarah asks.
That's his art, says Mom. This is why he wants to change schools. Making this art makes you happy, right, Craig?
Yeah. Wanna see?
Absolutely.
I take the stack from beside me and pass it around. This is really what I was creating the stack for, I think, to show my parents. Some of the best were the ones I just did for the patients.
Very original, Dad says.
I like this one, says Sarah, pointing at the pig with Quasi St. Louis inside him.
You put a lot of time into these, I see, Mom says.
Right, that's the thing. They don't actually take me much time, I explain.
I'm starting to get a little bored of them, actually. I want to move to something else.
So how are you feeling, Craig?
Dad puts the stack back on the floor.
You look a lot better, Mom says.
I do?
Yeah,
Sarah says.
You don't look all freaky as much.
I used to look freaky?
She doesn't mean freaky, Mom tells us both. She just means that when you were down, you looked a little under the weather. Isn't that right, Sarah?
No, he looked freaky.
A flat affect, that's what the doctors call it. I smile.
Right, well, you don't have that as much anymore, Sarah says.
So, you want to quit school?
Dad brings us back to the real deal stuff.
I don't want to quit.
I turn to him. I want to transfer.
But that means quitting the school you're currently at.
He can't handle the other school, Sarah says. Look at...
Hold on a second, I can talk, I say. Guys, I look at all three of them in turn. One thing that they do in here is give you a lot of time to think. I can't explain it. Once you come in, time just slows down.
Well, you don't have any interruptions, that's probably it.
Also, I think the clocks are a little off.
I wave my hand. Point is, you have time to think about how you got here. Because obviously nobody wants to come back. I don't want to come back.
Good, me neither, says Dad. What I said last time about actually wanting to be here, that was a joke.
Hey, did you bring the movie?
Of course. I can watch some of it with you, right?
Absolutely. So anyway, I've been thinking about when things started getting bad for me. I realized it started after I got into high school.
Uh-huh. Mom says. That was the happiest moment of my life, the happiest day. And from there on, it was all downhill.
Right. This happens to a lot of adults, Dad says.
Will you stop interrupting him?
Sarah interrupts. Dad folds his hands behind him and straightens his back.
It's okay, Sarah. I think I was concentrated on getting into executive pre-professional because it was like a challenge. I wanted to have that feeling of triumph. I never really thought about the fact that I'd have to, you know, go to the school.
So you want to do art, Mom says. Well, let's consider. I never really liked math. I was good at it, but only because I liked having basic information in front of me.